Blair, this, you guys are my family now. About 2 years sober, I can tell you that I haven't had to wake up in a panic or have any guilt or shame or, you know, worried about what I did the night before. I can actually wake up and feel good. I'm not the same person I was. I think differently. And it's only because, for whatever reason, I was so desperate and I walked through that door and came in here. And for whatever reason, I have no idea, I followed the steps that someone suggested I do. I have a sponsor, and I have a loving God, and in that, my life's changed. I drank like a pig and did stupid shit, like someone said before. I loved it, but that was me. And I no longer have to do that. I get to choose the life that was intended to be, and I'm really enjoying the person I'm becoming. So I'm totally grateful for Central as my home group, and I'm glad I get to be here tonight. Enough out of me. I'm going to, let's see, the group asked me to remind you to please make sure your phones are off and to refrain from moving around or talking while the speaker is sharing. I asked Liz to speak tonight because, you know, they come in and they tell you to listen for someone who you might have something in common with, and I did. I listened to her, and each time she shared, you know, I noticed that we do have a lot, not only our alcoholism, but some other things in common. So she came to mind immediately, and I asked her to come and share her story. So I'm really excited for her, too. Thanks, Liz.
All right. My name's Liz, and I'm an alcoholic. And I'm extremely nervous starting off here. You know, although I do feel like I'm at home here all the time. First of all, my sobriety date is November 19th, 2006, and that's by the grace of God in this program. And I'll just go back to tell you what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. I was born in Vero Beach, Florida, to my mom and dad, obviously. I mean, into, you know, a decent home. My father was an alcoholic, but he wasn't a violent alcoholic by any means. He was one that just fell asleep into his food at night or, you know, passed out on the chair. And, you know, my mom was the one that tried to keep everyone together, you know, and act like everything was okay on the outside. And I inherited a lot of that trait from her. And, you know, and that's one of those things about being an alcoholic is, you know, I try to, like, say everything is good. Everything's good on the outside, but sometimes, you know, in the inside, I'm just crumbling and I'm just dying inside. And, you know, I learned that through growing up and watching my mom. And when I was about 8 or 9, my dad got sober. So I was introduced to AA at a very early age. I didn't go to meetings with him, but I knew he was gone. And I didn't know till later that he went to 3 meetings a day for 5 years, you know, and he died sober when I was 20. You know, he died of actually lung cancer, which is, you know, kind of comical because we all come in here and then we smoke, but that's a whole other side story. anyway, I started drinking when I was about 12 or 13. We had easy access at a friend's house. She had a full bar and we had big parties over there. And her parents really just didn't care. And from the very beginning, I was a blackout drinker. Don't remember what I would do, wake up horrified, just like what you were saying, horrified, not knowing what happened the night before, but couldn't wait to do it again, which is so absolutely insane. I mean, I didn't even like the taste of it. You know, and that's what we did in Vero. We partied. We partied in the groves. We partied on the beach. You know, I lied. I went around my mom's back all the time. I snuck out. I did all those things in order to party and to drink. And I don't think I knew that I had a problem at that time. I kind of knew the things that I did were a problem because I didn't like the person that I was even then. I mean, I was one of those, you know, you hear I didn't fit into any one group. I was friends with most everyone and just, you know, never felt comfortable in my own skin from early on. And at the age of 18, I got a DUI on Christmas Eve. It was a beautiful, beautiful night. And, you know, I had to get picked up by my mom and dad in jail. You know, they had to come bail me out. And I just remember, you know, going through the whole thing, booking process and, you know, being in the general population and, I mean, thinking, what the hell? How did I wind up here? And my parents were pretty lenient about that. I think that they thought maybe that was the end for me, or, you know, that I had learned my lesson. And, you know, when you go to court, you have to be, you have to go to AA meetings, you have to do the counseling, you have to do all that. So that was my first AA meeting, and my dad went with me. And my father was one of these people that was very laid back, and I look back now and I realize that what he had was serenity, you know, through this program. And, you know, he let me do what I needed to do. I mean, he didn't try to steer me. He would tell me, you know, this maybe isn't a good idea, maybe you ought to think about this, but he never pushed me in any one direction. And, you know, and then the other extreme was my mom, who was just very strict, and, you know, I was perfectionist. I mean, you know, I always remember my mom, I always did well in school, and one of the things that my mom said is I got a 99 on a test, and she goes, well, where's the other point? I mean, that was the words, first words out of her mouth, and that's the way I, you know, was raised. I mean, I was expected to do all this stuff, and I actually managed to do really well, but at the same time party. And pretty miraculous, actually. So I went to the AA meetings. It didn't stop me drinking. I actually fought more with my parents and went ahead and did whatever I wanted to do and didn't even hear the message. Didn't even think anything twice about it at those meetings. There was a period of time after that, though, that I did kind of slow down, and that was the time when my dad got sick. That was a life-changing event because it actually led to the field that I work in now. Because he, like I said, he had lung cancer. He was diagnosed, and he died within like 3 months. And it was during that time that I realized that what I really wanted to do with my life was work in medicine. And so I chose that path, and I stayed home an extra year to go to a community college, and that's when I met my now husband, too. And so, you know, God works in mysterious ways. Because I always think back, I met him a month after my father died, and he's almost like exactly like my father in some ways. So it's just kind of ironic that way. So anyway, I got into college. I went to college, and then I came up to Orlando to go to UCF, and, you know, I did all the stuff, partied there. It wasn't until near the end of my bachelor's degree that I actually started drinking pretty heavy and started drinking on my own, you know, and I thought, well, this is probably a problem. And I knew it was a problem, but I just didn't choose to do anything about it. After that, I actually applied to PA school. I'm a physician assistant, and I got into school up at University of Florida, and by the grace of God, I actually drank every day in school. Sometimes even before class, because I just couldn't not drink. I mean, I wanted to not drink. It's like, you know, it says in the book, I would wake up every day and say, I'm not going to do this today. I'm not going to do this today. And lo and behold, I'd be off to the races at some point. Had hid it from my roommate pretty well, but it was really funny because a lot of times she'd come in the apartment, she goes, man, it always just smells like alcohol in here. I'm like, well, you know. I kind of knew why, but she didn't. It's funny because today I'm still friends with her, and she knows everything, you know, about me, and because they're making amends and, you know, what we do. You know, I've actually been able to help her with some family members of her own through this program, which has been a blessing. Anyway, from there, after PA school, I got married, and I was drinking daily at that time, and my husband married me, and I don't know what he knew or what he didn't know. He swears now that he's like, man, if I would have known, you know, I might not have done this. But I'm like, come on, dude, you had to know. I mean, you know, I was one of these people, like, we'd go to dinner, and I'd have stashed bottles of wine all over the place, and I would have to drink before we went to dinner because there would never be enough. And then we would drink at dinner, and then on the way home, I'd be like, hey, we need to stop and get more wine. And I'm like, I guess maybe because he's normal, he doesn't get it. And, you know, I'm thinking either that or you were just stupid. I can't figure it. No, I'm just kidding. He's not here tonight, by the way, so. I mean, some days I look back, he is really a saint because, I mean, we're actually still married, which is, that's actually really a miracle. But where was I? We got married. In PA school, what you do is you do 1 year of classroom and then the second year of rotations. And I actually got a job through that in the emergency room. And I started work straight out of So I graduated school, got married, started work. I mean, all in one. And I was drinking pretty much daily at that time, and this was in 2000, and even going to work that way, because it just got to the point where, you know, in order to get rid of the shakes in the morning, I had to drink. And my husband didn't know about it all because I had it stashed everywhere. You know, I did a lot of drinking in my car. I worked nights, and I would have it stashed in my car for when I got out, and then I would drink on the way home. And it was around 2001, 9/11 happened. My husband's a pilot, and he lost his job because of 9/11. And, of course, that was just a better excuse to drink even more. You know, I look back now, and I know that that wasn't, you know, a reason to drink or an excuse, but, man, it escalated from there. And it got to the point where I had a few complaints at work of patients that would say, you know, she smells like alcohol or whatever, and, you know, letters. And the people that I work with would come to me and confront me, and I say, okay, well, I'll go to AA. So, you know, I actually did start to go to meetings during that time, but I never came to meetings sober. So I never came to Central because I didn't know about Central, but I used to go East Side and one meeting down in a church, and I remember going there, and I was so drunk, and there was like four people in there, and I was talking, and then they cut me off, and I was so pissed about that, and I couldn't figure out why. You know, I mean, that's just that selfish, self-centered, you know, alcoholic that I was. I couldn't figure out why they didn't want to hear what I had to say. You know, and I was poor me. My husband lost, you know, it was all that crap that we say, you know, it's all everyone else's fault. It's not anything to do with me. And, at some point I wound up being intervened on and with my husband, and I had been seeing a counselor, and it got to the point, cause I was drinking and driving all the time, and it's, you know, by the grace of God that I didn't kill anyone or myself. And I only still have one DUI, and that's by the grace of God too. But I wound up going to rehab in Clearwater, and, you know, I did what they said. I listened, but I still don't think I got it because they put me out on partials where you go in at night go in during the day and out at night, and I actually started drinking while I was in rehab. It was, you know, and would come in there drunk, and they didn't get it right away because, I mean, I guess I was pretty functional. I don't know. But the last day that I drank then was I was driving somewhere and I hit a car and then I took off and then I turned around to find the car. This is absolutely insane behavior. And wrote the guy a check and said, please, please don't, you know, I'm in rehab. Please don't call the cops. And, you know, I'm really trying to do this. And, you know, I mean, I was obviously drunk and he had a 6-pack of beer. So then I start lecturing him thinking, well, you know, maybe you have a problem. I did, really. I mean, and I think back on that and I'm like, God, I really was full of myself. But I wound up in a parking lot, you know, in a mall, passed out in my car, and a cop found me. And he actually called my husband and my sister-in-law, who I was staying with. And I wound up back in the same rehab the next day. I think it was the next day or so, detoxing again. And the day I went back in, two girls in that same rehab had snuck out, and they used, and one of them died that night. And her name was Elizabeth Ann. And that was really ironic to me because that's my name, Elizabeth Ann. And I was like, it was one of those moments of clarity where I was like, okay, God's really hitting me in the head and saying, you know, I was about to cuss. So, you know, what the hell are you doing? I mean, aren't you going to get this? You got to get this. And, you know, I surrendered at that point, fully and realized that, you know, I could die of this disease because everyone says, you know, you can die. And I didn't believe anyone. You know, it was not going to happen to me. That was not going to happen to me. And I just, you know, I had never seen anyone that died of it, and that was my first experience with that. And it was, you know, an eye-opener, like I said, a moment of clarity. I came back, and I came to Central for my first meeting. I got my sponsor here for my first meeting, actually through my husband going to Al-Anon. That's a whole other interesting story. But, and, you know, I worked the steps with her, and she was an awesome sponsor. She worked with me. It took me like a year and a half to do my 4-step because I was so afraid of doing it. And let me just tell you, if you're new here, just do it. it's really not that hard. I mean, and it's so cleansing and it just feels good. But I mean, I was just so afraid of it because I always look back down to here and it said made amends. And I was like, oh no, because I thought I had to tell like everything that I did. And, you know, that's not the case. You know, that's why we have sponsorship is because we don't really know what we're doing. And, you know, the people before us have a little bit of a better clue. And that's, you know, and it's helpful. So listen to your sponsor, get a sponsor and listen to them. Just my suggestion. So, I worked the steps and, you know, my life got better. I mean, things were going good. My husband got back with the commuter airline and he was still furloughed from his main job and life got better and actually wound up having a baby in sobriety. And, you know, blessing. He'll be six next month. And the thing was after I had him, you know, life was busy. Like I said, I mean, one of my biggest things with the story is it's real easy for me to rely on this program and do this thing when things are bad. Okay. But when things get good for me, that's when I get really complacent, you know, resting on our laurels, like it says. And I put everything in front of my sobriety at that point. You know, it was too tiring after work to go to meeting. I wanted to spend time with my son. I wanted to do anything but do what this, you know, what was suggested. And the other big mistake that I made was in working the steps is I did make it through step nine. I did, you know, some of the inventory, but I never gave this thing back. I didn't try. I thought my job was enough, you know, taking care of people all day. It doesn't work that way. So, you know, you really, this is a gift that's been given to me, and, you know, I really realized that I have to give it back in order to keep it. So anyway, I had my son. I wasn't doing the deal. I wasn't calling people. I wasn't coming to meetings. Just, like I said, I would prefer to go home and work out versus come to a meeting. And one day, someone offered me something at work. And, you know, I had this feeling like, oh, I've never had a problem at work. So, you know, I was kind of proud of that, you know, that pride that gets you there. And this person offered me a bottle of pills. Pills are a little bit of my story. I'm not going to talk about it a lot, but I'm just going to throw this out there because I took it with no reservation, no thought, no nothing, and started taking them and actually wound up writing prescriptions for a year. And that's a big part of my story, too, because, I mean, I should have many, many felonies under my belt and probably be in prison right now, and I'm not. And, again, that's by God's grace and nothing but that. I mean, at least that's the way I see it today. I did that for a year, and, you know, I would come to meetings on occasion, but, you know, I wasn't being honest. I mean, honesty is the first step, and let me tell you, if you're not honest, this thing will take you back out. Because it's our brain, it's our thinking, and, you know, it's that shame, it's that guilt, you know. But I also look back, too, before I ever picked up again, you know, like I said, the behaviors come back long before you pick up. So, you know, I have to be very vigilant of what's going on and what I'm doing. And, you know, because, I mean, I can love anything, shopping, food, exercise, you know, anything, though. So I was writing these scripts. I was still working there, and it was October of 2006. I got a letter because I had taken a script to a pharmacy, and the pharmacist said, well, I got a call about this. And I was like, oh, shit. So, you know, I get home. I'm like, what am I going to do? I go back. I'm telling my husband, I got to go get tampons. And he's like, you know, because I'm leaving back to go back to this pharmacy at like 11 o'clock at night because, you know, we just lie, cheat, and steal all day. I mean, that's what was my life. It was revolving just that whole chaos of trying to get stuff and, whatever. I don't like that anymore. So, and I went back to this pharmacist and I said, look, I don't know why I did this. This is probably the most one crazy thing that I did was I said, well, I wrote that. And I told her basically what was up. And again, God's grace, she's actually in the program. And she actually said, well, I'm going to rip it up and we're just, you know, not going to do this again. But she said, did you ever think about getting into PRN, which is a professional resource network for medical, or it's actually for anyone that's licensed in the state of Florida other than nurses. But, you know, I said no, but I wound up getting a letter from them in October. And basically, when you get a letter from them, they say, you can't work anymore until you're evaluated and everything else that happens. So for a week there, I was not telling my husband what I was going on. I was acting like I was going to work. And, I mean, it was awful. And at the same time, to try to get off the pills, I decided to start drinking again. The logic there is just crazy because alcohol for me is it. You know, I get that first sip in my body and that craving just starts and it's just a nonstop. Because at that time I called someone here that I knew here. I started coming back to meetings, and I was coming to meetings, and I would leave these meetings and I every day at noon, and I would go out and drink again, and I just couldn't stop. And I wound up going to rehab again. Number one, well, PRN, you know, they highly recommended it. And because most of the time they want you in rehab for almost like 6 months most of the time for PRN. But I went to a rehab in Tampa for 6 weeks. I spent Thanksgiving, Christmas, New Year's away from my family, my son. It was one of the hardest times in my life, but it was probably one of the best times in my life, too. Rehab is one of those places where, you know, you get to look at yourself and you get to focus on yourself and, you know, you get to get clean, but it's coming out of there. You know, this is where you have to stay sober, is, you know, coming back into the rooms. You got to do the work and do the deal. And I had already gotten a sponsor when I'd gone in, someone in this group, and came back out. My husband was going back to work at the time. I mean, it was just really chaotic. And again, you know, he stayed with me. He understands that this is a disease. And, you know, I mean, I always have to say this to myself, and I had to say this to myself a lot, is, you know, I'm not a bad person. You know, I'm a good person who has a disease. And this disease makes me do crazy, stupid, shitty things, you know. And, you know, I just throw it out there because I know sometimes it'll help someone in the room, but, you know, I mean, when I was out there, I mean, I drove drunk with my son in the car, you know, and it was one of those moments where I go, I'm either going to kill him and have to live with myself and, you know, or someone else. And I just throw that out there because I know that there's other people in the rooms that, you know, maybe have done stuff that they're ashamed of or feel guilty about. And, you know, I'm an open book today. I don't hide it because I know everything that I've been through and all my experience hopefully will benefit someone else here, you know. So anyway, I got back home and basically dove into this program. I mean, came to meetings every day, started working the steps, wanted to do my 4-step this time, like right away, because I knew, you know, it worked. You know, admitting I was powerless wasn't a hard thing because I had seen it. Manageability was one of those things when I came in. I didn't really understand that whole term, unmanageability, and because, you know, our lives seemed normal. But, you know, there was a time when my husband used to take the doors off in our house, so I couldn't lock myself in rooms and drink. And he used to take spark plugs out of the car so I couldn't drive. And I'm like, well, that's not going to stop me. I mean, I used to run. I'm a runner, so I would run to the store. And then I'd run home with, like, 2 bottles of wine, and it looked ridiculous. I mean, I'm sure. But, you know, it didn't matter. I mean, you know, he thought he could do in it, and that's just how, you know, I don't know what the word would be. That's just the way we are. You know, we're sneaky, we're lying, you know, at least I am. I shouldn't speak for everyone in the room, but I am. I was very sneaky, and I lied, and I, you know, I would get around anything. And, I mean, that's just unmanageable. That's just not normal. People don't normally go to rehab twice in their lives. You know, people don't have people writing letters about you at work. You know, all that is unmanageability. Just a second about, you know, like the second step in God. I grew up in a Southern Baptist church and didn't particularly like that God because it was always that God of damnation and, you know, you're going to go to hell. I remember even at 18, I'm like, after the DUI, I'm like, I'm going to get baptized because you have to say you want to be baptized in the church. And so I thought that would solve everything and make me better. Whatever. But my logic is sometimes skewed. So, you know, coming back in here, though, my God is totally different. You know, my higher power is totally different. I always like to say my higher power has a great sense of humor because, I mean, look at us. He cusses like a sailor because I do, too. I'm really having to restrain myself up here. And, you know, it's all loving. I always like to say, you know, God is a loving being that just, you know, wants you to do well. I mean, I can relate it to people who have children or a dog. And, you know, you love that your children or your animals so much. And even when they do bad stuff, you know, you're not going to throw them out on the street. You're going to take them back. And that's the way my higher power is. You know, because, I mean, I still mess up. I mean, I still do. And, I mean, I feel like there's times when I walk and go, hey, God, I'm going to go do this anyway. I don't really, you know, and then come back, you know, and say, oh, I'm so sorry I did that. I mean, that's just because I'm human. So, anyway, so that's just my ideas on my higher power. And, you know, I'm just going to kind of run through a little bit of the steps. Third step, you know, I have to do that on a daily basis. You know, sometimes an hourly basis. I like to take my will back quite a bit. But, you know, it gets painful when I do that, and it gets tiring. I know when things, when I'm really tired, I mean, really just everything feels not comfortable and I'm tired, that usually means I'm taking my will back somehow. You know, again, like I said, I did my fourth step, fifth step. Six and seven are an ongoing process. Man, those defects of character. You know, and I can't remove them, only God can, and, you know, it's a work in progress. Like I said, I'm really grateful it's progress, not perfection. A little thing to go on is, in my sobriety so far, the last time I spoke up here, actually, I was 8 months pregnant, so it's a little more comfortable this time. I like having Claire on the outside versus on the inside, and, you know, that's another gift of this program that I've gotten is I have another child, and she's a blessing. And I bring her to meetings with me. I mean, a lot of people here know her because that's one thing I didn't do with my first one is I put everything first, you know, in front of this. And I can't do that this time. I mean, as much as I'd like to be at home with my kids, a lot of the times I'm doing this. I mean, I'm either in a meeting or I'm helping, you know, I try to help people, I should say, you know, or meeting with sponsees or just, you know, on the phone talking to people. I mean, just doing the deal. The other main major thing is my husband in the last year wound up having open heart surgery in March, and it was kind of a shocker to all of us because he had gotten sick and we couldn't figure out what was going on. And then he finally saw, you would think we would know that since I work in medicine, but no, we couldn't figure it out. We went to like 8 different doctors and because we thought it was like an ear thing or whatever. And in February of last year, right around this time, he wound up having a cardiac catheterization, and they found that he had a bicuspid aortic valve, and then he needed an open-heart surgery. And that's, you know, one of those things that, you know, just puts you a face in life, you know. And I did what you guys taught me to do. I mean, I was here at a meeting, I think, almost every day, even except for maybe the day he had surgery. Before I'd go to the hospital, I came to a meeting a lot of the times, or I'd leave the hospital, come to a meeting. And, you know, walking through that, I couldn't have done it without this program. I mean, and without my higher power. I mean, it was pretty difficult, but, you know, it's like most people say, you know, so it's three things. Trust God, clean house, help others, and no matter what, don't drink. No matter what. Because drinking would not have solved anything. It would have actually made everything worse. And, you know, it's through those painful situations that I feel like, you know, we gain some strength. And, you know, we have to walk through them, though. We can't just, I always like to say, don't sit down. You know, when you're in hell, don't sit down and have a sandwich. Or, you know, a lot of people say that here. Or don't decorate, you know, because I'm not going to stay there. But anyway, you know, it was kind of hard. And I'm going to talk about this because there's other people in the rooms that maybe have people in their lives that aren't in the program. My husband found that kind of hard. When I would come to meetings and do this first, he didn't quite understand that, and he kind of, had some resentments about it and still does. But, you know, I just told him, I said, you know, I can't do this again. I don't want to ever go back to that place again. So I'm going to keep doing what I've been taught to do. And I say that because, I mean, I've watched other people in this room walk through stuff, walk through deaths, walk through divorces, walk through losing kids, getting them back. And, you know, I've seen it work. And, you know, it's just a matter of actually having to do it. And like I said, the pain during the time is not fun, but it's the, once you get through the other side, the rewards are actually so great. And, you know, it's changed who I am. You know, a little bit on making amends, because I was thinking about this today. You know, I wound up, I am actually in PRN now, and I actually still work for the same doctors that I wrote those scripts under. They were actually willing to take me back after all of that. And, you know, I made my formal amends to them. But what I have to do on a daily basis is make living amends. And, you know, some of the things that I did, but, you know, with my son or in any other way, is today I try to be the best mom I can be. I try to be the best friend that I can be to people. And I try to be the best employee that I can be, show up on time, do my job well. And, you know, it's just changed the way I look at people and, you know, and have some compassion for the people that I take care of. I mean, I used to have this great cynical attitude there, and I've changed. I mean, I can see it, that I've totally changed through the steps in this program. You know, I treat people with compassion and love today, and I didn't always do that. You know, I was not always that nice person. I'm not, you know, always perfect either now, but I wasn't always that nice of a person. But today also, the other thing that I do is I do work with other women. That's actually the highlight, one of the biggest highlights I get out of this program, is to watch the people come in these rooms that are new and watch them come back and then watch them get sober and then stay sober. I mean, it's a miracle, and I love to see it. Actually, because that's one thing I brought to read. I did bring notes, but I didn't even look at them, so I don't know why. it's just part of, it's my, one of my favorite readings in here, and it's out of Chapter 7, Working with Others, and it says, practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. It works when other activities fail. This is our 12th suggestion. Carry this message to other alcoholics. You can help when no one else can. You can secure their confidence when others fail. Remember, they are very ill. Life will take on new meaning to watch people recover, to see them help others, to watch loneliness vanish, to see a fellowship grow up about you, to have a host of friends. This is an experience you must not miss. We know you will not want to miss it. Frequent contact with the newcomers and with each other is the bright spot of our lives. And, you know, it's one of my favorite passages because it's the way I feel. I mean, on a daily basis. I love still to come to meetings. I'm at meetings most every day that I'm off of work. Again, like I said, I work with a lot of newcomers and sponsees, and I watch them walk through things. And it's funny because I watched one just recently walk through it, and I got upset, and she said to me, but we got to trust God. And I was like, all right, you know, because, I mean, she had to remind me, and that's, you know, I love it in here because, I mean, we're in this together. I always like it when Nina says, you know, it's like we're walking and one person falls, we're all holding hands and we're picking each other up, and then the other person falls and we're picking that person up, and, you know, it's just a big community of help. I don't know a better way to say it, and of love. I mean, I could actually say that I actually love the people in this room and care about what really happens to them. And I feel that they probably do that with me. I don't think I really missed anything, and I'm way early. because I can't really think of anything else to say. So I'm just grateful to God and to this program, like I said. And, you know, if you're new, stick around, because don't, you know, like they say, don't leave till the miracle happens, because it will. And you just got to believe. and just trust the process. Don't always have to trust exactly what's going on, but you got to just put the trust in the process. And all that other crap that seems to be bothering you or that's going on, you know, like the IRS is auditing you or, you know, you're getting a divorce or all of that will take care of itself if you just do the few simple things that are suggested in this book and do it with the sponsor, though. That would be my highest recommendation. But, again, I'm really grateful to be here and to share my story with you guys, and I'm going to go ahead and finish now. Thanks.